This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 7th of June, 2021. Of course, the market action wrapping up in very interesting fashion last week with the release of what I would describe as sort of Goldilocks data for this market. So, you know, it looks great that we have a nice rally in stocks, but looking at sort of the narrative around this, I'm a little bit skeptical here, but let's see where this takes us this week. We had, just a brief recap, a non-farm payrolls release that missed a little over 100,000, so at 559K. This is great because it shows that, yes, jobs are coming back, but we're not getting some white hot data after the really strong data points we had earlier in the week last week, suggesting the Fed is going to have to do a sort of a violent course correction or something, I guess, is the market's reasoning here. So regardless, let's look at slide two, NASDAQ 100 bouncing back very strongly, closing at the new local little high there, even if we are in the shadow of the all-time highs previously. The S&P 500 on the cash side, not quite making that new high. If you're looking at the futures, it did look like a new high close, but the cash index not quite there. And just want to point out once again, the sort of the background bit that makes me a little bit uncomfortable with the narrative here is the best thing for us that the recovery loses steam, because that means the Fed is not going to come with its taper or its eventual rate hikes, because you see the degree to which treasuries on slide three, treasuries and the especially NASDAQ 100, but stocks in general are very positively correlated. I think some cause for just for a little bit of discomfort here. I'm not saying it means anything right now, but I think it is an uncomfortable narrative as we head into the next bit of this recovery. What's your takeaway? What are you set up for looking for with this market and your thoughts on my points, Peter?
Well, it was interpreted as a Goldilocks scenario, but I think ultimately the market is wrong, or at least the investors that dominate the growth pockets, the technology stocks, I think are getting this totally wrong. I think right now, a lot of people is making the mistake, and I was probably also that camp, although I've always been saying that we are the first phase of the inflationary pressures are supply driven. But I think it dawned on me last week when I saw these time series that the expansion in the personal income and income level globally, and specifically in the US, but also to a certain extent in Europe, is so large. And especially for the US, it's the biggest increase in income into the economy since the post-World War II years, and it's actually eclipsing that. So I think very quickly we'll move from a supply-driven bottlenecks type of economy to something that will be, you know, driven by the demand side. I mean, there's so much income sloshing around, and I think people will be surprised what it will do to inflation, but also to growth rate for equities. And I'll be writing today about how this future looks like for different equity industries. So I think the technology investors are getting this wrong. I think we will see suddenly much higher inflation and interest rates. And then on slide four, the only game in town still, or not the only game, but the most exciting game is still in the commodity sector. As you can see, it's, our theme basket is up 3% for the month. It's just powering on. It will continue to support European equities on a bid versus the US. So that's how I look at the market. I think the NASDAQ 100 was making a mistake on Friday, John.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see the follow-on action again, as indicated this week. And speaking of commodities, Ola, I mean, we have a lot going on here this week. We have these oil especially, and that is one of the key inflation indicators going forward across the board. What are we looking for? A wrap up last week, and what are we looking for this week?
Well, I think we're seeing signs that this commodity rally is still in a bit of a pause phase. And then you're absolutely right, Peter. We need to go from where the expectations have been driven markets higher to where the demand really sets in and carries it forward. Because we can see, if you look on slide 8 in today's deck, this is just the commitment of traders report covering the week to June 1st. And it was a week where commodities bounced back very strongly after that mid-May correction. The Bloomberg Commodities Index almost up 4% that week. And but if we should just highlight some of the dates in this big table there, it's basically on the two columns on the columns on the right. We got the percentage change in the position, and we got the percentage change in the price. And you can see we had strong price gains across the board, but investors not really responding that aggressively. Overall, the net long only increased by 3%. So it could indicate that speculators are just balking a little bit at these elevated prices that we've seen recently. And but obviously elevated prices is there for a reason. The fact that we are expecting a continued strong pickup in demand, especially some of some of the green metals, as we talked about energy as well. Energy, to a certain extent, politically driven right now. OPEC Plus really got the stranglehold on the market. They can continue to almost dictate the price going forward. So at least the short-term outlook there is very much depending on what OPEC does. But just to finish off the story with the where the demand is going to come from, I think increasingly, and that's also been one of the expectations as we moved deep into 2021 and into next year, that the demand growth is really going to be outside of China. We've seen commodity imports, they had data out overnight. We saw actually a slowdown in the four major categories, oil, coal, iron ore, and copper. There was one pocket of the copper market that was up, but generally copper imports were lower. So we could indicate two things as well. Importers are, again, hesitant about these very high prices, and potentially also that we've seen the post-pandemic growth sprint starting to slow down. So we're still bullish on commodities, but the growth has to come from demand primarily outside
of
China.
Yeah, and you're seeing, of course, in China, that crackdown on so-called crackdown on speculation. They're clearly getting uncomfortable at these levels with prices.
Yeah.
And makes you wonder how, you know, how their economy deals with if prices continue higher. There are have been one of the main commodity importers.
Exactly. And obviously the time delay from goods being ordered and they arrive at ports means that we're not going to see the impact of those actions before next month.
All right.
In the next month's data.
And then there's the whole side, Peter, of all this, especially on the oil side. And we've talked about it before. I mean, you're seeing so much ESG focus. We're forgetting about the stuff that still makes the world go round, black fossil fuel energy, fossil fuels. But what's your focus here on slide 10? I mean, when this has got to hit at some point, this lack of investment.
Yeah, so this activist fund called Engine Number One is the company that took three board seats at ExxonMobil and have shaken up the entire industry, and especially this company, the largest oil and gas major in the developed world. And I'll come back to what we see here on slide 10, but I just wanted to say, we talked about it, last week, I think actually, that the Engine Number One is now wants to create this new type of ETF, which I think is fascinating because the ETF is dominated by massive passive ETFs like BlackRock, Vanguard, Fidelity, that just sits on capital and have had such a passive approach to equities, not having an opinion about anything, right? They're just sitting there and collecting their money. Whereas this company called Engine Number One, they want to create this ETF called Transform, where they want to transform the S&P 500 to make big changes. So we'll be watching this company. But Shane Jacobson, our CIO, he posted this link to the website where they have this slide deck on ExxonMobil. And I think it's interesting for a lot of different reasons. One of the reasons is that ExxonMobil have ramped up their debt levels to keep their dividends still continue to have the love from their old investors that wanted the dividends, right? But they couldn't support that with free cash flows. So they leveraged up their balance sheet. A bad idea, risky business. But the the insert of slide to the right of slide 10 in our slide deck today, I think is exactly at the crux of what is happening in the world today. You know, everyone that is a regular listener of our podcast know that we've put out this idea that one of the things that we're looking at today is a 15-year trend today, until today, where online have beaten offline industries. So ExxonMobil have been disregarded as companies that don't generate a lot of shareholder value. And if you wanted to be rich or get a lot of wealth, you invest in companies like Facebook and Microsoft. They have much more scalability. Their CapEx is much lower relative to the extra free cash flow and revenue you generate. And you can see this chart here. So ExxonMobil invested $309 billion in CapEx over a 10-year period on top of an asset value of $377 billion at the time. So they doubled the amount of their already asset value, and it generated almost zero in extra value for the company. And as I said to you, John, this is why we're in this situation, underinvestment in the physical world. It's one of the reasons why I think why we'll have massive bottlenecks going forward. But secondly, this cannot continue because no matter how much we like the digital world, it still stands on the physical world. And if the physical world cannot deliver shareholder value, we have a problem. Then prices are set wrong. And then you can almost hear it. This is another reason why I think inflation will be higher going forward.
Oh, and also one of the reasons people have headed for those other areas is the whole platform effect, the monopolization of those industries by big names.
Yeah.
And along those lines, over the weekend, a huge development, because we have, we neglected to mention on the podcast, there was a G7 finance minister meeting over the weekend. These things don't generally tend to produce much of note, but with this whole global minimum tax in play here, this is a big deal. So they're establishing a minimum 15% tax for you know, of course, it's mainly headed towards the big U.S. Infotech giants. What's your takeaway here? It looks like it could shape up into something around the OECD next round in July. There's talk of a G20 meeting in July as well. There's not a lot of meat on the bone here, but this is an agreement in principle. This is moving forward, and this will have to have implications for the value of some of these companies.
Yeah, it's a deal in principle, as you say, yeah. Because it has to be ratified by the G20 countries, but the major countries like Germany, United Kingdom, and United States are in on this. And I can really encourage you to follow on Twitter Gabriel Sockman, which was the assistant professor to Piketty that wrote the book on capital and how capital have outperformed labor income over a century. And he's the foremost expert advisor into this conversation. He's also the one that has the best data set on what's really going on in tax havens. And two things from this tax deal. So one thing is that you create this level field right now they have agreed to 15% tax, which means that if you, for instance, have a German company that booked most of its overseas profits in Ireland at 5% effective tax rate, then the German government can say, hey, okay, it's fine, you can do that. You can do all that, and if you're transfer pricing, but we will have to tax you the additional 10 percentage point of your profits because you're a German company. So it will severely limit the incentive structure for having these tax lawyers and tax havens. So that's nice. The final thing is, it's part of the gentleman agreement here, or the deal in principle, this digital tax, where they want to tax any digital company with a profit margin above 10 percentage point. There, for those companies, they want to charge a 20% tax rate on all profits above that threshold. And that's because if you're a digital company that can manage to have a profit margin above 10% of your revenue, it means that you have on top of you've done some good things on innovation, but you also have a lot of networks effects and other ecosystem effects that that suck in users in an abnormal high profit business, and they want to take some more share of that from the government side.
All right, we'll have to see follow that story very closely and see the relative performance. So of course, the biggest names would be impacted by that. Just briefly on the FX side, FX is painfully low volatility lately, but just wanted to pull out one thing that I think was kind of interesting about the reaction on Friday. So something like the low yielding currencies, the Swedish krona, Swiss franc, and the Japanese yen, among others, reacting quite positively to, I think, obviously looking at the time of the reaction, the U.S. Jobs report. So you see Euro Stoxx jolting lower. If you're just looking at the chart, not knowing what drove it, it says this looks good. We're looking towards the 10 level here. Could break down on increased prospects for EU growth picking up here as we're opening up, etc. But to me, if this is merely reaction to U.S. yields dropping, it's not a very healthy sign. We need some more positivity around Europe and for the Swedish krona to be able to perform on something besides a chop lower in interest rates. So we got basically, and interesting as well, we have the US dollar a bit weaker in the wake of this, again, on the lower rates as the Fed expectations have been pushed back down towards the sort of near the lows of the recent cycle. The reaction to Aussie dollar was far more swift and reversed the prior day sell-off, a little bit less so in Euro dollar, which I'm showing on slide 7. It just feels like this market is being sort of jolted around from data release to data release. Very little conviction. You're not getting any sustained directional move. We have the last really big data point ahead of next week's FOMC meeting will be this US CPI release. And then there are all the whisper and chatter about a crazy used car rise, possibly driving an eye-popping headline figure. And then people will say, well, this is just a one-off, it's transitory. It's just a very difficult environment. And the key will be the FOMC meeting itself. And also curious, the market just totally ignoring these comments over the weekend with former Fed Chair Yellen and current Treasury Secretary Yellen talking about it would be healthy to have, or a plus to have, a slightly higher interest rate in the U.S. So, yeah, I just think in FX, we may be stuck in this choppy market. So let's look at the macro calendar for the week. Nothing up really today. And we have the Chinese PPI, a key inflation gauge for the world, up on Wednesday. Bank of Canada also Wednesday. And the big ones are Thursday, the ECB meeting. We'll have Althea in tomorrow to help preview that. And the US May CPI release is the other big focus as the last major data point ahead of the following week's FOMC meeting. For today, that's a wrap. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.